CliffCentral.com.
All right, it is Friday morning, and Ben and I are here to look after. Is that a Terence and Philip hat that you got on?
No, it's my golf hat. Oh. I'm going to play golf late this morning.
No, because, you know.
So, you know, getting into it, Gareth.
Like Terence and Philip from South Park, the Canadians, they used to wear a T and a P hat, exactly like that one.
Yeah.
And that all that, their whole cartoon was, hey,
pretty
Terence,
much.
Hey, Terence, I'm going to fart. And then Philip would go, and he'd go, and then, you fart now, Terence. And Terence would go, and they'd go, that was the whole show. It was fantastic. Real higher grade stuff.
Well, it was always so funny how in South Park, the Canadians are always different because their heads actually opened up. So you could always tell a Canadian because whenever they spoke, they just the top part of their head just lifted from the bottom part.
Right, exactly. Oh my God! All right, so you're actually excited about the stadiums opening up again. I mean, this is something that was a stupid rule from the beginning because we didn't need to lower the number of people in a certain venue at a certain time. It made fuck all difference whether there were 50 or 100. Obviously, the sports business, and this is part of what you do in your podcast. You discuss all of this stuff. Sports business has probably never been as bad as it has in the last 2 years. It's never been worse for sports in the world than it was in the last 2 years. The things that had to happen, the whole way that we watched, we behaved, we enjoyed, we didn't enjoy sport, it all changed. And now you reckon it's going to go back to where it was, or is that going to take a long time?
Well, what people sometimes forget is that pre-COVID, local sport here was not in a great place. People weren't exactly flocking to the stadiums.
No.
You watch PSL games, there have been about 19 people. You watch local rugby games, even in Super Rugby, you know, when the Bulls weren't so great. There was like a turn of people. And cricket, domestically, nobody watches that, not even family members, which is quite awkward. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to be this miraculous thing. I think people have definitely missed it.
Yeah.
And, you know, since I don't know what the criteria was, if you had to have a vaccination or a booster shot or whatever shit that was. But you could go back to stadiums quite recently, but there hasn't been a full stadium. And the Springboks haven't been seen live. You know, when you think about it, they won the Rugby World Cup in 2019. Next Saturday is the first time that South Africans, their true fans, can actually see them in the flesh as world champions. That's it's great. Like 2.5 years of not playing in front of your own supporters, which is very weird. So Loftus next weekend, the Bryce smoke, the amount of brandy that's going to get clapped.
It's huge.
It's just going to be, it's going to be one of the joys. It's going to be like Rugby World Cup 1995 all over again because people haven't been able to do this. All this pent-up Bok emotion. Our team is great. We're playing Wales, so we should win. Yeah, Gareth, I'm so hugely excited. And the fact that, I'll never give government any credit whatsoever because the people that take away the things should not be given credit for giving them back.
Yes, exactly.
But this whole thing about not having to even have – so there's no need for a vaccination certificate. There's no need for a stupid PCR test, whatever it is. You literally go there as a civilian with a ticket that you bought with your money. Mm-hmm. And you gain access to a place.
I know.
What I just described there is an absolute luxury.
Yeah, this is the stupidity of the world we live in at the moment. Now you're meant to celebrate stuff that we had just 3 years ago and we didn't think about. There's an interesting question here. Somebody wants to know, Ben, Carl says, Ben, it's so nice to hear that those cold showers have helped your cough. Yeah. Some criticism from Carl.
Yeah, Carl, that's probably a joke for last week when I had flu. So, yeah, well done. I mean, you think about comedy, it's all about timing. But keep it up.
Someone, Congo Chris, brings up Carl's mom's a bitch, a big fat bitch, biggest bitch in the whole wide world. Stupid bitch, 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 bitch. All the boys and girls, something like that. That was a great song, too. Yes, those are the glory days of South Park. I haven't watched it for a long time. Is it still going?
I watched it last year. It's still as good.
Okay.
It's just that everything's moved on now, you know, like when South Park started, there was no real internet. So they were the only ones who were saying certain things.
Right.
Whereas now, because of WhatsApp groups and everything else that we expose our dark, dirty, sensitive humor to, that kind of stuff's everywhere. But South Park were the original, the best. And the fact that they're still going is amazing. Trey Parker and Matt Stone,
genius.
Those two are absolute geniuses. They really are.
I have not been to a theater for years, but the only time I made an exception was to go and watch their show, which was called, what was it? God, I've just forgotten what it is now. But it was basically
the Book of Mormon.
Book of Mormon, thank you. Book of Mormon. God, that was funny. That was the only time I've genuinely enjoyed the theater in my life. I mean that. There was a time where I tried to enjoy that stuff, but just like rugby, it's not for me. And then that one show, Book of Mormon, I loved that. Suppose, you know, it's like I go to
work. I really think that they should make that into a movie.
Oh, it would be amazing. Absolutely amazing. All right. So apparently a lot of people saying that there are new South Park movies. There's a new South Park special that's come out. Terrence and Philip have girlfriends called the Queef Sisters. Oh, great. Okay. That's terrific. Biden announced going off script accidentally. The U.S. needs to raise money right now to fund the next pandemic lockdown, as the last one wasn't that successful. They're not even hiding it anymore. I wouldn't be surprised if that's true. I don't know whether that's true or not. I sent you the story yesterday about these two parents who had to take their kids out of a school in San Francisco. I just want to quickly refer to this because I think it's interesting what's happening in America, because it could have repercussions for the rest of the world. You know, they sneeze, we all get a cold. These two parents took their kids out of or were forced to take their kids out of a San Francisco school because the school is basically teaching gender theory to these kids, and the whole concept of whiteness and. Basically, that they're going with all the leftist tropes, and the school is implementing them, and it seems that the board of the school are right behind this. And these parents were like, hang on a second, my 8-year-old just came home and is suddenly gender confused. That wasn't the case when they left for school yesterday morning. That was the case when they came home from school yesterday afternoon. I know that there's a big fuss being made about this because it's such a cultural issue in America, but I think homeschooling, which I always used to think was such an embarrassing, weird thing. I knew kids who'd been to homeschools or been homeschooled, and I always thought they were weird and outliers and they didn't necessarily develop social skills and all of that stuff. I'm looking at it now thinking maybe that's the safer route for parents. If you don't want your kids to be indoctrinated in bullshit anymore, especially in America, not so much a problem here. But the best thing might be to actually just take them out of the school system completely. Do you agree with that?
I totally agree. Totally agree. Take them out of the school system and teach them martial arts as well, rather than gender studies. No, it's absolutely ridiculous. And I just think that the more this happens, the more we realize that teachers are becoming, I always hate saying this because it makes it sound old, it makes it sound grumpy, but journalists used to have integrity. Teachers used to have integrity. Doctors used to have integrity.
Yeah.
But they all sort of get corrupted by this woke bullshit. Like we saw doctors just turning on a dime when all their beliefs during COVID, they suddenly all start thinking the same way. And groupthink is a very dangerous thing. Same with these teachers now. The moment there's any sort of conflict, because we all know all this woke stuff, people are very aggressive. That's why the woke can never be reasoned with, because they're very aggressive and just unsavory people. So this whole gender thing is being like hurled into them. There's no discussion. It's just absolute aggression. And teachers are just going with the wind. So all they're thinking is like, well, I'm just going to tell this little shit anything until 2 o'clock and I get to go home and drink Chardonnay, so I don't care what it is.
Yeah, but also,
that laziness is now developing so many social problems.
See, I don't mind if adults are busy trying to indoctrinate each other, because if you're stupid enough to fall for really bad ideas, then you deserve it. But I do have a problem.
Yeah, go for it.
I have a problem with kids being, and I say this as a non-parent, but if you're busy putting bad ideas that are not true, that are anti-science, that are dangerous, frankly, and that will probably result in the kid who's absorbing that shit being less happy than when they didn't know about it. I think that's a kind of abuse. I don't think that that's good, and we shouldn't allow anybody, teachers, parents, nobody should be doing that to children. It's just cruel. It's cruel. Kids are going to have to put up with a lot. Growing up in the world of the 2020s, they're going to have to grow up with social media and bullying and pressure and competition from people all over the world. It's not this cocoon cotton wool world that some people want to imagine it is. Hard to be a parent too. What you don't need as a parent is to have some nefarious ideologue who is masquerading as a teacher, inputting really stupid ideas into your kids' heads while they're still soft. You wouldn't tolerate that if someone was trying to indoctrinate your child into a religion. You wouldn't tolerate that if they were trying to to indoctrinate your kid into a cult. I interviewed these two women this week who were part of that cult in KwaZulu-Natal, the KwaSizabantu mission, you know, where they make that Akwele water. And there was that huge story. It was turned into an award-winning podcast by News 24 about this mission, which is actually just it's like a religious concentration camp, really. There's no two ways about it. And these two women escaped from it, and they've got a really interesting story.
And they bottle water?
Well, it's part of their business. That's how they fund the thing. So they they make that water. And you can hear the interview. We're going to put it on next Monday. And I'm surprised that we still have this kind of stuff happening in 2022, where there's information available about, you know, how to not – what things you should not do in a civilized society. And yet these things are happening. I mean, Ruth says, for example –
No, but Gareth, I've got to stop you there.
Yeah.
I've got to stop you before we get to Ruth's message. You, of course it's happening because people all search for belonging. And common sense and anything out of the window. Like, cults have been around forever and ever because they prey on people who are losers who need association. That'll never change. That's just a human thing. Yeah. People are lonely and worthless. They need to have some sort of association. Like and thing is, like, you always give sports shit, yeah. But a far better part of the spectrum is guys putting on jerseys on a Friday and coming together because at least they can have some sort of association where they feel something.
I don't,
but they're not going to cults.
No, I don't have a problem with that at all, Ben. I just choose not to be a part of it. I choose not to be a part of a lot of things because belonging is exactly the opposite of what I'm interested in, as you know. But
I'm exactly the same as you on that. But
you put up an interesting thread. I think this was on Twitter, but maybe you can explain. So it's from someone called Lou, and I want to go through this just bit by bit, and then you can comment on it if you'd like in the YouTube comments, and we want to hear what you have to say. This guy starts off, or girl, I'm not sure if it's a guy or a girl, says, some of you have done nothing.
It's a woman.
It's a woman. All right. So Lou says, some of you have done nothing with your life, and you're mad. You have a college degree and a smartphone with access to virtually anything, and you could barely get out of bed in the morning while you spit on people who built a whole world with nothing but a horse, a map, and an axe. You've made nothing with access to everything. You've conquered nothing. Hell, you can't even conquer yourself. So go tear it all down. Scream into the void about how unfair it all is. It's not that you've wasted your short time here. Surely not. Carries on. This is all in a thread, right? Don't bother with your own legacy. You're busy shitting on the long dead who aren't here to care. Go and burn down every Starbucks. That'll show them. Torch the target. Tear down every monument. Deface every memorial. But what have you built? What have you left behind? So take your benzos. Benzodiazepine. Watch your porn. Get Uber to drop off your dinner. Buy an adult coloring book. Have sex with strangers to ease your crippling anxiety. It's not you. It's the system, really. It isn't fair. Go and cancel someone. Dox someone. They deserve it. You're the good guy. Don't write an epic novel worth building a statue to remember you. Go and troll 7-year-old problematic tweets. Ever on the hunt for a boogeyman. See, now you've accomplished something. Cancel everyone. You're a warrior now. A real hero. And lastly, whatever you do, never ever take a moment to self-reflect on your own failures. Never own them. Never take a hint of responsibility. Remember, you're just a helpless victim of circumstances beyond your control. This all means nothing. It's like you weren't even here. I mean, if that isn't screaming into the howling wilderness of so many people's misery, I don't know what is. What do you make of that? You obviously sent it. You put it on the internet. I saw it on your feed, so you agree with it.
Yeah, of course. And I think it brings up so many good points. But, you know, like whatever Lou's put in there as a thread, we talk about this kind of stuff on an ongoing basis in the show, which brings you to the conclusion that as a race, as society, we have unfortunately peaked, and therefore we don't know what to do. That's why all this gender crap's coming in. It's the end of civilization as we know it. It really is. It might not mean that we're all just going to be set on fire and there's going to be a meteor hitting the planet, but we as a human species has completely peaked. Like if you look at our days today, Gareth, we don't need to do anything. We can gladly sit at home. The world will carry on. If in about 100 years ago, if say we didn't go out, then I don't know, barbarians would have raided our village and raped our women, or a road wouldn't have been built,
yeah.
or cows wouldn't have been sort of like killed, so nobody would have eaten. Nothing will change if any of us, except for doctors maybe, stay at home today. Nothing. So we have pretty much pointless lives. We really do. Obviously, there's another extreme. Like, we can still be good about that. We can still be decent people. We can still try to find ways of adding. But ultimately, we've peaked. I mean, what else do we eat as humans? Nothing. That is why we sit at home watching TV and ordering food that makes us fat, because humans don't need to do anything anymore.
So
always comes down to that. This whole bitching about gender thing is because we've got nothing else to do, because there's nothing else to do.
Yeah. I see a lot of people whose lives, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine and she was saying that she went out for dinner with somebody this week. And this guy just, he kept sending the food back, complaining that, you know, the chips weren't crispy enough, or that the steak wasn't done to exactly the level of cooked or raw that he preferred. And he was complaining that the lettuce wasn't the right kind of lettuce. In a, you know, I thought about it. I thought, you know, somewhere in that story is somebody who's just like, they're looking for a purpose. They don't have a reason to live at the moment. So this becomes the purpose, because we live in such a civilized, such a fine-tuned, such a comfortable world. Some people anyway. I mean, there are lots of people in the world who do not, and God bless them, because they'll actually have character and personality. But if you send food back to the kitchen two or three yeah. times, like, you don't really have a reason to live. You've exhausted the purpose of a life. Even if you have other things that still excite you, the fact that that's become the thing that you want to be known for, that's the thing that you are comfortable in inflicting on our restaurant staff. You know, it drives me crazy.
Well, yours is stupid, because by the second time round, they're all spitting on that.
Yeah, I think so. I think so too. I think that's what's going to happen. All right, well, we're going to meet Thapelo Mokoena, who's well-known to people in South Africa. He's a well-known SAFTA award-winning South African actor. He's also been known as Quinn in Trackers, Fatini in Wild at Heart, William in Bulletproof, JK in Ayeye, and Axe in Nothing for Mahala, among other things. He's a Sotho man raised by a Zulu mom, born in a small town called Ladysmith under the Mkamba tree on his way to hospital. This is a beautiful story. He's also from the same town that boasts the birth of the legendary Ladysmith Black Mambazo, who went on to make us proud all over the world, Sugar Boy Malinga, Menzi Ngubane, and a whole lot more. In addition to his work as an actor, Thapelo is also a wine producer, a restaurateur, so we can ask him about people who send food back to the kitchen three times, and an all-round African ideas man. So we're going to speak to him about what he's doing at the moment. And he's also interested in survival and kind of what we can do to be better human beings. So good reasons, all of those, to have him on the show this morning. Thapelo Mokoena, how are you, sir? Yeah, let me just bring him back on. There he is.
Hey. Top of the morning.
How are you doing?
Yo, top of the morning, gentlemen. I'm very good. I'm good.
It's nice to see you.
Hey, man. Gareth, good to see you, my brother. You know, I always look forward to chatting with you. Your mind interests me. You're one of those people. You know? I'm always like, this is going to be explosive, you know. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm happy to have you on, but it sounds like you have really expanded your field of expertise and the number of things that you're involved in. I mean, you know, you've got a restaurant, you're a wine producer. Tell us about all of this, because usually actors, they stick to their knitting, because I don't want to be rude here, but a lot of actors I know don't really have anything else they can do. And I know you're a man of many talents, so you were never going to be one of those. But these seem like quite disparate things.
Yeah, you know, I guess, you know, we people, we come in different shades, tones, impacts, forces, energies. And I'm raised on a farm, man. Like, I grew up in Ladysmith.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned of my birth story, I was born at home in the Bundus, in the rural areas of Ladysmith. I couldn't wait to get to hospital. And I grew up herding cows, you know, for a good the first 5-6 years of my life, like on a farm, milking cows, fetching water. So the idea of being a working family was entrenched very, very early on in my family. You know, I'm raised with my four brothers, you know, a family of five boys from my mom and dad. And really the one thing I remember from when I was a kid is that my family just really worked hard. You know, my dad with his standard four education, God rest him, you know, the kind of things he achieved, you know, because he was the person we had front row seats. His life was, you know, we had front row seats to his life. And we watched this man who really didn't have an education sort of do the most amazing things, you know, founding the National Soccer League in this country, you know, forming a professional football club out of nothing. Used to sell milk on like a donkey cart, yeah, eventually driving trucks to eventually buying his first football club. So I credit all of that to hunger and having seen one of the greatest examples of resilience and going against the grain, you know, during a very oppressive time, that man achieved things that I can't even believe he did. But, you know, that was an example for all of us, my brothers and I. So the whole business interest, the entrepreneurial appetite was born. And that's all my brothers and I ever dreamt of being, becoming successful moguls. We didn't know how, but that's what we spoke about as kids.
You know,
and when I look at our lives now, we are... You know, we've entrenched in the world of business.
I love the story because, first of all, you were born like close to the soil, which is something that I think, you know, many times Ben and I have touched on the Friday episodes of the show, but it comes up often. It's like there's so many people who are living in a world now which is so removed from where we all come from. And like if you don't have any connection to where you come from, you do feel like unmoored. You feel like you don't really have a harbor to go back to when you're out in the wildness of the sea. It seems to me that a lot of people were never taught how to grow stuff on the land. They were never taught how to herd cattle. They were never taught, you know, we value an academic education. We say, oh, well, you know, that person is a doctor or that person is a multi-graduate in several different disciplines, but they can't change a car tire or raise their own livestock or grow something in the fields. Those skills are probably going to be more valuable in the future than a law degree. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely. Man, you've just nailed it. Absolutely. You know, the one thing I always credit my parents for is teaching us or keeping us connected to, like you say, the soil,
yeah,
the ground. Obviously, growing up at a farm, you kind of don't have a choice, but we were made conscious of agriculture. You know, when I was growing up, there used to be a whole class or what you call it, a whole class on agriculture, on working the soil, mm-hmm, you know, on seed and planting. I don't see that in our syllabus at schools anymore.
No, hell no.
And as a funny story, I always say this to my Joburg, to my city friends. I'm like, the one thing I think that has been a blessing in my life, especially as an artist, is I was really blessed with perspective. I travel the world, I live in a city now, but I've got so much POVs from other facets of life, like from a farming aspect where there isn't much electricity, right, where there isn't much, you know, technology, but just the basics. And speaking of what you touch on, we, my brothers and I, my mother would section out pieces of the field for us and would give us seeds to grow different sort of vegetables. And we all had to take care of our little patch of the garden throughout the year. We all had to learn how to rotate the soil so we could change, you know, little patches the following year. So a funny thing I always say to my friends is, if all food supply had to end in the world, yeah, and all supermarkets were to close and all we had were seeds, I'm sad to say this, but I would probably outlive all of you guys because I would know exactly what to do.
That's right.
I would know exactly what to do. I promise you, with a pumpkin seed, I'd know exactly how to plant potatoes. I'd know exactly how to get some carrots off the ground. So it is a blessing. And you're right, Gareth. We that conversation is not top of mind anymore. And the way things are going in the universe, we're going to need to have these conversations a bit more.
These are the skills we need.
Incredible,
I mean,
man.
This is something you brought up a couple of times, right, Ben?
Yeah, exactly. But all of those things you talk about there are hard work. And that's another thing that people, they always gravitate away from that. Like, screens are so easy because they tell you everything. Tilling the soil and learning about seeds, that's dirty. That's a long time ago for a lot of people.
I mean, we've sort of, you know, walked slap bang into the middle of a world that is all about convenience. So how quickly can I do it? How quickly can I get the six pack? How quickly can I dye my beard to make it look like it's naturally gray? Like, to give it a natural, no. You know, sometimes these, Garrett, you laugh. I get that all the time. Guys are hitting me up on my Twitter, DMs. Hey, bro, how do you get your beard that gray? I'm like, how do I tell you this? I hate to break it to you. This is just God at work and, like, genetics, you know. And people want a product. So, yes, we do make a lot of money off convenience. Yes, we do make money off me being able to get a product, my wine, to you in under 48 hours.
What's your wine called?
But, yes, if you compare it, my wine is called Nero. N-E-R-O, the narrow varietal, the narrow grape.
Nice.
Yeah.
Listen, dude, can I just ask you, while we're talking about you, I just want to quickly, this is really cool. There's this new horror series which is called Pulse. Yeah. Pulse is on Showmax, and you have a role in this. Just tell us about Pulse and tell people why they got to watch it, because it sounds like a very cool series.
Yeah, so 21 years in this acting career, thank God, it's been really fruitful. Mm-hmm. And it really feels like I've been in the gym for the past 21 years, or rather 20. And walking onto the set of Pulse felt like my first day at work, because I feel like, you know, the experiences I've had in this career.
Hello? Sorry, you.
In this field.
No, we got
Sorry,
you back.
Man.
No, we
lost
got.
Me there for
yeah, we got you back now. So just pick up where you left. You were saying it felt like the first day on the job when you went on the set of Pulse.
Absolutely, it feels like my past, you know, 20 years have been a warm up, and like a friend of mine likes to say, "Practice makes permanent." I feel like I've been practicing to get to this point in my career where I can take these leading man roles and really carry a story from beginning to middle to end. And Pulse is exactly that. You know, we shot Pulse in Mauritius last year, spent 4 months on the island. It's a survival horror series. We're in the world of gaming, international gaming company run by my character, Errol. Mm-hmm. And these are a bunch of gamers who are about to introduce a reboot to the world. And this is the reboot of the Pulse game that has an opportunity and a chance to change their lives for good. Everything is going well. They're almost done with the design. They're about to present it to the publishers, and something goes wrong. Mm. And this is the world we're in. And, you know, not being a gamer myself, but obviously being a performer and being method and going into the world, I really respect this world and how it translates and how it exposes us to people's psychological positionings is really beautiful. And I think everybody can find themselves in each of these characters, if not all of them.
Well,
you know, so it's really, really interesting. Came out yesterday, and you guys should check it out.
Definitely. I mean, especially if it's just come out now, I've heard good things about it. Showmax is where you will find Pulse, and you can go and watch a brand new horror series called Pulse. Acting and producing in South Africa is a pretty tough business, but I mean, you really have had an amazing career. I've got to ask you this too. Because people are now talking about the beard. You brought it up. Congo Chris says, as a fellow salt and pepper natural, I also get hit with that question about how to go gray. Tapelo isn't making that up. There used to be a time where people didn't want to show that they were older, because gray usually was associated with old. But you've got this really, you've got this young face and then this gray beard, and the contrast is probably what gets people thinking that it's fake. Do you get a lot of questions about your age as well?
Yeah, absolutely. All the time. You know, I'm 39. I'm about to turn 40 towards the end of this year. I get it all the time. For me, it's like, it's an interesting conversation because also male grooming has become quite a reality, you know, especially in Africa. You know, we're more aware and we're more conscious of our upkeep as men. And as a result, my fellow brother Chris, they will ask that question. I've been working on something really amazing for the past 2 years since the beginning of COVID. And I'm excited to say, in a matter of weeks, we're about to go live and introduce what I've been working on, another product range. It's not wine this time, but in the grooming space, in the African male grooming space.
Wow.
I'm about to take care of all of us. And I think for me, this is the exciting part, to start having conversations around male grooming, especially from an African products ingredients perspective, right, accommodating our African climate as African diverse men. So, Chris, look out for the great announcement soon. We're about to take over the grooming space.
That's very cool. I wonder when we'll ever get to the stage, if we will, where, male kind of grooming as opposed to female beauty products, because you can't use the word beauty with men, otherwise they'll get all nervous. But, it's a multi-billion dollar business in women's makeup and beauty. I mean, probably one of the greatest industries that's ever been built in the last 100 years. And although men are not going to nearly spend as much, I suppose, there's certainly a huge gap in the market for guys to kind of look after themselves a bit better, you know, just improve yourself generally.
Yeah, 100%.
That's exactly what it should be. It's the whole improve yourself for better. People get all, as you say, nervous around beauty. Mm-hmm. But guys should just be better with everything. And this is where the grooming comes into it. But it'll never be as lucrative because guys need so few things to actually look good. This is the irony of it, is that they're so lazy, they can't even get the basics right. And that's what we should be doing.
Yeah, and there's room there. And Ben, that's funny, but there's room there for a much bigger conversation. I agree with you. And lest we forget, the family member that really goes out to invest in wellness products or grooming products is the female. So even if grooming, you know, is about, we're talking about male grooming, the ones who spend on grooming in general, even our grooming as men, are our ladies, our mothers, our sisters, our wives, our girlfriends. So that conversation is late. And I look forward to really picking it up without being nervous, like Gareth says, and just being okay with the fact that I'm trying to be the best version of myself. If that is external or internal, that is the mission. And I think over and above selling products, the same way I treat the wine is good already. We've established that, but we need to sell the thinking behind it, the story, the motivation, the inspiration. And in the same way, we want the external beauty that we're targeting to influence the internal. We want you to, our products, to associate with a good man, with the best version of himself, the best father, the best son, the best husband. So there's a bigger conversation than just looking pretty and being the most handsome guy in the room, you know.
Yeah. Well,
unfortunately, you've already lost Gareth.
Yeah,
he cares about the most handsome man in the room. He doesn't care about the attributes.
Well, Parallel Parking says Tapelo is another lovely South African. Thank you for having him on. Well, I mean, we haven't spoken for a while, but it seems to me like this is also true, I suppose, across the board. There are some people who over the last 2.5 years have actually gone backwards. And Ben and I were talking about this earlier, you know, the screens and people who don't really put in the effort, and if they don't have to go into the office, they won't. And there's like this general laziness and apathy for some people, but some people have really grabbed this opportunity with both hands and become better. They've actually improved.
100%, man. Like, you're looking at someone like myself. Like, I'm so technologically challenged, man. Like, I'm getting better, I won't lie, but like, I've realized that, you know, we kind of have to get on with it and adapt, you know, and this is a good quality for us Africans, you know, Africans of all color. You know, we are resilient and we adapt. Tell us there's load shedding, we'll come out looking pretty the next day. But with looking good, like we've bathed on the warmest water, tell us there is no water, we'll come up with a plan. Tell us there's lockdown and we can't move, we'll make a plan. So yeah. I've had to challenge myself to understand things that are coming up that are in the future. I'm talking about the digital world. Selling not at the store, but moving on to selling online. How do I engage with you in that facet? So the laziness aspect really puzzles me sometimes, because we all now as Africans sitting on our smartphones, we've got access to so much information. Yes, I'm on my social media, but I could research things. Like, you know, you raised some interesting facts and information on grooming globally and the industry. That is true. You know, it's a $1 billion industry.
Yeah.
We have, as Africa, we still, if you walk into your bathroom, 80% of your products in your bathroom are European, if not more. You know, we're talking about face wash, lotion, body wash, toothpaste. Those products are not coming out of our, you know, so there's a big gap where we can literally create for our brown skins, for our ingrowns as black men, because our hair curls and curls into our skin. You know, and so we could do better to take care of our skin where the hair follicles grow, that in turn preventing things like ingrowns. It's simple information.
Dude, you know.
But how do we package that?
I got out of the shower yesterday and I was suddenly thinking, you know, we take it for granted now that we kind of wash once a day or twice a day or once every 2 days. You know, people have different routines. But you think about it, just a hundred years ago, there was nowhere in the world where people were doing that every day. Nowhere.
Mm-mm.
Like, there wasn't a single part of the planet where people were actually, like, imagine having sex 500 years ago. Like, your ancestors and our ancestors and everybody else's ancestors were doing. Must have been a very unpleasant experience. I mean, sure, it was pleasant by comparison with being, you know, killed in a war or having your village burnt down by marauders. But the fact is, like, even we think about how, you know, this beautiful girl and how she would smell and what she would look like and what she would feel like. I mean, there was no such thing as like bathing and grooming in the 1500s anywhere in the world. These people were stinky. They were smelly. They were dirty. And yet they still managed to make the generations that led to us. I mean, I think that's quite an incredible realization. And when I was getting out of the shower, I suddenly thought, you know, here we are. We wash every day and we're like, you know, you're putting on deodorant, and if you've spent the whole day in the same clothes and you haven't changed and you've been doing some heavy work, you know, you've been lifting things up and moving things around, you're like, I really should go and have a shower. That wasn't an option for people 200 years ago. They just carried on stinking it up for a whole week.
That's incredible. That's incredible. And you know what? Their skins look better.
Yeah.
With all that less, you know, they still got by. And I think, you know, for them, it wasn't about being dirty or for those generations or being dirty or smelling a particular way, because they couldn't see it. It wasn't there. So that was enough. Yeah. So I can imagine that they didn't see it as dirty.
Yeah.
They didn't see it as, they just saw it as, oh, thank you. You just caught another buck. Thank you for breakfast. You know, it was just that, you know. So survival, I don't know, man. I think the evolution of just humanity is just beautiful. And and where it all comes from is such a beautiful place. Less is definitely, without a doubt, more. You know, we put so much stuff on us that, you know, no wonder we turn out the way we do it.
Ben says, though, we have to keep it at a minimum because guys are pretty lazy about this stuff. I mean, I have my routine. I could survive on toothpaste, hair shampoo, and not even that, because you could probably use soap. I mean, I don't use fancy, expensive shampoo. And like a body wash, like a shower gel or a bar of soap. I mean, that's all you need. You know, the rest is like a luxury. I mean, sure, you know, once you get out of the shower, then there's probably deodorant and that kind of shit. But even that, I wonder how many people absolutely need that and how many people really don't. They're just doing it because everybody else does and you get sold this shit.
Well, if you're eating good, like, organic foods, and you can also then bypass some of that as well.
Yeah.
There are some people who believe that toothpaste is actually really, really bad for you, and they get away from that.
Yeah.
Because they say the fluoride's really bad for you. Gareth, if you've got a dreadful diet, you might smell a bit different as well. Because the whole thing about perspiration is a natural thing. And here we are putting antiperspirant on us. The word anti should be looked into a little bit more. Yeah. I'm a big fan of moisturizing because I'm getting old. But I'm a year older than you. I don't look as good though. So I subscribe to moisturizer, but I'm of this opinion that the moisturizer skin enough for you to look okay now, but it dries you that you need it for later as well. I know it sounds like a beauty conspiracy, but I reckon that's how it works.
Now, Ben, it's definitely not a conspiracy. Here's something that always puzzles me. I travel quite a bit with my work and all my other endeavors. And, you know, I found myself, where was I? I was in Asia somewhere. I was in Thailand, I think, some years ago. And I was so, like, in my head and so, like, stressed about not having enough moisturizer. And the people I was with on the island who live there don't even touch moisturizer. It's not even a thing for them. They don't wake up and, like, I could feel my skin cracking because I'm from South Africa. We Vaseline. You wake up, you put Vaseline, you put glycerin, you put aqua cream, you put, you know what I'm saying? Like, camphor cream. I was like, what is this? Why were we sold? And when our natural bodies already produce these lubricants. So, you know, I think there's a bit of a commercial exercise that was done on us here that was more aggressive, or a big PR campaign that was more aggressive than anywhere else in the world, because we're so big on lotion, the type of lotion, the fragrance. And hey, somebody's making top dollar off that. And whether or not we should be super conscious of the products we use or just our wellness is the question. That's why I say beauty or wellness is not just about I've put on my beard oil, now I'm ready. It's also internal, because what are you consuming? What are you eating? I'm big on fitness and cycling and running. And of course, I'm a father now of two, and I'm also coming to my super adult age. I'm about to turn 40 and I'm conscious of it. Mm-hmm. I found myself and my wife are more conscious of what we eat. She's gone superfoods all the way, and I'm sort of tagging along. And the more I tag along, the better I feel. The more reserves I have, my energy feels better. It sits better. So it is the entire thing. What goes in must come out. So there's a consciousness. And I think beauty should not just be about, oh, I look like James Bond now, gray beard, black this, that. No. Beauty should be about how do you feel?
Yeah.
You know, and if the past 2 years have taught us anything, is we gotta be more conscious about how we eat, what we put in, and how it influences everything that we are externally. You know, the people we've lost in the past 2 years due to underlying health issues.
Yeah.
You can't, what's underlying those issues?
You can't be fat.
What's underlying?
You can't have diabetes, and you can't just eat everything you want. And you know, I see people walking around just like eating the most terrible food, and I think you're just asking for trouble, because later on that stuff's going to come back to haunt you. Carl says, Gareth, be careful what you say. You are a social influencer. Please, I'm not a social influencer. He says, we don't need people running around stinking. Things are bad enough. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, look, I mean, I don't know. It wasn't me. It was Tapelo who said less is more when it comes to that stuff. And I think maybe
Gareth,
Dogozo agrees with you.
Look at it this way, Gareth. You and I together, I'll be the black influencer, major influencer. You be the white influencer. We'll take over the world. We'll be like nudity. And we'll just like advocate for stinking. Go to work as yourself.
No, I'm not going to
stink.
No,
by God, Gareth and Tabs.
let's just be clear. I'm not a fan of stinking, but I do think that it is pretty important that people have perspective on this stuff. Like, you know, there's some people who will say, I have to have two hot showers a day. You're like, actually,
yeah.
You know, that's kind of a new thing. Down. That's a new thing for humanity.
Yep. But, you know, Gareth, I want to get back to the really unsavory mental image that you had of sex 500 years ago.
Yeah.
There is merit in people having their own sort of smell.
Yes.
And that is attractive to a mate. So back then, you would have, because people weren't so cosmetically minded, there was no breast augmentation, there was no one doing killer squats for killer buns.
Sure.
So smell was probably one of the major attraction features. because everyone looked like cottage cheese back then.
That's true.
Nobody was really doing aesthetic enhancements. So the smell, the whiff that you speak of might have actually been the best thing.
Yeah, maybe that was part of the turn on.
Interesting.
No, because now guys always talk about boobs, they talk about ass, all that kind of stuff. Back in those days, they probably go, "Oh, Jimmy, you should have smelt it. It was." Girls probably have nicknames just based on their woof.
Oh, the potency.
Yeah, right.
Like onions, but not so bad.
I like that because I really like that, Ben, because we are of the animal world, you know? We are.
Yes.
We are. Like, we are. Like who are we to, just because we now know we overloaded with information, who are we to discredit that?
Mm-hmm.
That maybe was how you sent a signal to a girl. Maybe that's how a girl identified you as the best hunter, because you were just potent, boy. Mm-hmm. You had a potency about you. There was a funk that just, you know, really said you've killed four buck this week. You know, like, I don't,
yeah.
Hey, and you know, like,
and I mean, being covered, I mean, in, being really covered in like blood and getting back to the camp with your fresh kill on your back. I mean, there must have been a point in human history where that was a more attractive proposition than the really clean dude who'd been washing in the spring water all morning but had never caught anything for the last 3 days and relied on other people's charity.
He got nothing.
He got nothing, right?
Yeah, that boy was useless. Yeah. He was like Mumish of the week. You know, in fact, take me back, man. Take me back. I think I'd do well. Just give me seeds. I'll plant some.
Well,
see, this is all so much more interesting than listening to beauty tips, really.
I think so too.
This is how we should engage and talk about beauty, gentlemen. This is it. Imagine a campaign. Imagine the ad. Imagine the ad.
Yeah.
Before and after.
But what are we selling? Because what we're really telling people is you don't need any of this stuff. So maybe we should shut up right now because you're about to launch a men's range. So if we stop now, it'll help sell the product. Because you're not gonna sell anything to people if you say stay smelly, go out there, let the funk build up over a couple of days. You know, don't wash every morning and every night. Wash every 3 mornings or whatever. I think we're arguing against this.
No, but I mean, the whole thing about this is selling towards city people. What we're talking about is people who are growing away from the cities. Buy products in the city by all means.
Yeah, all right.
I want to go more rural.
Yeah. Okay.
And also, Gareth, what we're saying here, in addition to what Ben is saying, I think the ultimate message is here, stay true.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Stay true.
Yeah.
That is the ultimate. I think the takeout is stay true. Be freaking true to you and yourself, you know. And I think my products, you know, will definitely communicate that because of how I've approached the ingredients, of how I've approached the you know, we'll talk about it soon enough. But
sure, can I ask
it's you, about staying true.
Can I ask you quickly, do you still have the family farm in Ladysmith and do you live there or do you go there often? Like, what's the story? Because that's a beautiful legacy and you obviously want your kids to inherit it one day as well. I mean, how much attachment do you still have to that land?
Quite a lot, Gareth. Quite a lot. Yes, we do. We still have, you know, we still have our home. Lost my grandmother at 94 last year. So she's, you know, the matriarch of the family is no longer here. She's the woman who delivered me from her daughter, my mother.
Right.
So we still have it. I go there regularly. The tree I was born under has been cut down now, I think 3 winters ago. But I still go to that little area where my umbilical cord was thrown. I go there with my kids. I take my wife there. I'm quite rooted and connected to that home. That's like Big Mama's house for us. And we want to keep it alive, my brothers and I. We do events there for our little cousins and family members, you know. And I think for me, that root is something I really don't want to let go. It's the one advantage I have over the world and over society, because things are moving so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, whenever I'm done with all my shows, I just go there. There isn't much signal going on there, but there's mountains and the fresh smell of the Drakensberg right next to us.
Oh, wow.
It's northern Natal. So I treasure that area so much.
That's why I'm asking about it, because I think that is massively important. I'm going to say goodbye to Ben. He's got to run. But George Meany's here, the CEO of Auto Trader, and he's got some stuff to tell us.
Hey, so George.
Bye, Ben. Hi, George, as it goes.
Bye. Great weekend.
Cheers, Ben.
Cheers, Ben.
How are you doing, George?
I think he's on mute.
I was on mute.
Oh, good. Awesome, man. What's been happening? What can you tell us this Friday morning?
Well, Gareth, the first thing is that it has now become cheaper to ride a horse than to drive any car.
I knew it. See,
talk about staying true. We're going back in time. I love this show.
No, listen, this morning, George, there's a theme going on here. I mean, everything Tapelo and Ben and I were talking about before is about like the things that we could be doing better that our ancestors were doing. And it sounds to me like you've hit the nail on the head here with this horse thing. So the price of fuel is now so high that it's cheaper to actually buy and ride a horse.
Yep. And cheaper by more than 50%. So some crowd in the United States did a study, and it costs roughly around $5,000 to maintain a car, and about $1,000 for insurance, and then another $1,000. That's about $7,000 a year to run a car, whereas it costs to the average cost of a horse is anywhere between $500 and $2,000 per annum. So less than half the cost to ride a horse,
sure.
And very dependent on hay prices.
You've just depressed me.
No.
You have just depressed me.
Don't you wish we still had horses instead
no.
of cars? Why do you say no?
What? Are you kidding?
I do. I'm not kidding.
All right. It sounds like Tapelo's on a bit he's a bit of a delay here. All right. What else have you got for us, George?
And then, Gareth, there was a bear in Tennessee. So this bear, I'm going to send you the link there if you want a visual.
Sure.
This bear decided to open up a F-150 Ford, climb inside, and look for snacks.
Oh, my God.
Now, the funny thing is this bear didn't destroy the car. He actually opened the car like a human being, got into the car, opened up the glove box, found a packet of M&Ms, took the packet, got out of the car, and then attempted to open the packet of M&Ms.
I'm telling
you. Are we sure it wasn't an M&M commercial?
But these animals are getting smarter too, and we're starting to see that maybe they're evolving as fast as we are, and they're developing skills like opening the glove box, opening the door, getting in feet first. You know, this is not the kind of behavior you might have seen 100 years ago. Maybe they are getting smarter.
They could be evolving just like we did, and getting to a stage where, you know, who knows? One might answer you one day.
One day something will be.
Hey man, or these could just be.
Yeah.
It, you know, or maybe these could just be the signs, gentlemen. We need to really relook our positions on this world and look at going back a few steps. Nature's literally saying, see us.
That seems to be the theme for this morning, but I'm just hoping that there isn't some animal in the future that will be riding us to work because it's cheaper than driving a vehicle. That wouldn't be good.
Uber horsepower.
Exactly.
Well, the girl piggyback, I suppose.
Yeah. Hey, listen, somebody has a question
and
here.
And Ferrari has entered the...
Sorry, let me just throw this in quickly, Borge. Congo Chris says, I saw a pearl-wrapped Mustang GT yesterday, the ugliest thing I've ever seen. And I say that as a Stang fan. What do you have to say to that, George?
No, you know what? When people wrap their cars in weird and wonderful colors, it actually just absolutely buggers up the car and its original beauty. I mean, I don't know if you've seen that matte pink wrap that people do on their cars, or this mustard yellow matte wrap that people, it looks like vomit. It's
terrible. Okay, that doesn't sound nice. I'll agree with you. You're a bit of a purist on that front. Sorry, you were saying something about Ferrari?
Yeah, so Ferrari's entered the fray of electric vehicles, because up to now they've been making hybrids. So they say they want to launch 15 new models between 2023 and 2026. So if you are a Ferrari fan, you can expect Ferrari to come out with some interesting electric cars from 2023 onwards. So, you know, it's interesting that they're moving away from their hybrid strategy to electric cars.
Okay, well, that seems to be a trend all over the place, right?
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely it. Very true. I mean, for example, you know, just to add on that, you know, you obviously know, I can mention the car brand I'm associated to.
Yeah,
right,
go for it.
On the show. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm a global ambassador for Volvo and, you know, been so for a couple of years now. And it's amazing, you know, to add to what my brother there is saying, the electric car sales have gone up in the past month by 60%. Jeez. You know, so Volvo has sold more electric cars for the first time last month than your normal petrol or diesel, you know. So there is a definite, like a true, like aggressive shift, which is interesting, man, because the world is headed there. You know, I charge my vehicle. I've been charging my vehicle for 3 years. Weird concept. But the fact that I can charge my car for the same value or almost paying the same as it costs to charge a cell phone, maybe twice, and it's effortless, just a plug on the wall as I park, and having that, you know, that hybrid experience has really, you know, sort of changed the way I view things. You know, even when the petrol goes up, I'm like, it's horrible, but like, I'm like, whew. At least I can just, you know, I can use a bit of electricity and balance it out, and it works.
You are speaking George's language here. He loves this.
Love this.
I mean, it's fascinating, Gareth. I'm so traditional, Gareth. Like, I even forget to charge my car, and when I don't have enough money, I'm like, why didn't you charge a damn thing? But like, I'm getting there. I'm getting used to it now, and I promise you, this approach is sustainable, is sensible. It's just that obviously we are people and we are stuck in our ways.
Yeah, we just have to make sure Eskom
and,
keeps up.
And with, maybe we want to ride horses.
Yeah, well, I mean,
yeah,
of course. Yeah. What else you got for us, George? You know.
And then finally, Gareth, I don't know if you've heard, Mercedes-Benz South Africa has recalled 13,159 cars sold between 2006 and 2019 due to possible brake failure concerns.
Oh, my God.
Inside the one of the cylinder housings, there are bolts that potentially are rusting. And so if you have a Mercedes-Benz manufactured between 2006 and 2019,
wow,
phone Mercedes-Benz or go onto their websites and go and have a look if you're one of those recalled.
That's a massive gap. That's a massive time period, timeline.
Yeah.
That's huge.
And yeah, that's going to cost
us
some money.
I mean, these
money.
Things happen. Not a, it's going to cost them some money, that's for sure.
Damn.
Sure.
All right, well, gentlemen, I'm going to have to call us to order at the end of the show. It's already 8 o'clock, and I appreciate both of your time. George, always good to see you. Tapelo, great to catch up, man, and I hope we get to see you in person soon. Keep doing the great work that you're doing. Don't forget to catch Tapelo on a brand new series, which is called Pulse. It's on Showmax. It's a horror series. He has a leading role in that. You need to watch it. It's amazing. By all accounts, everybody's telling me it's a winner. And great to see you, dude. We'll catch up soon.
Much love, Cliff. Great to see you. Salute, my bro. And yeah, I can't wait to catch up with you soon. Cheers. I'll send you some wine.
Thank you. That would be very nice. Cheers, everybody. George, have a good weekend. Cheers.
That's a done deal.
Bye, guys.
Cheers, guys. Cheers.
Much love. Bye. CliffCentral.com.